The following episode of the Hot Tag Wrestling Podcast was recorded on November 14, 2019, but because of certain travel issues, was not edited and uploaded until today. We thank you for listening, and hopefully you still enjoy the show. God almighty, the Hot Tag Wrestling Podcast is back. We are alive and well, and I hope all of you listening are as well. We got plenty to talk about this week. I am your featured attraction, Brian Dusky.
It is me, Mr. Nicky Fontaine, the fantastic one himself.
Now, as I mentioned, a lot of major events went down this week, including AEW's Full Gear pay-per-view that featured not only some great matches and memorable moments, but also the one thing that makes wrestling so damn exciting, and that is a bit of controversy.
Yeah, we all have a bit of differing opinions on that unsanctioned match. I think we're going to save that for the evening, but everybody has their own opinions about a lot of that show. Not even that, but the championship title match, Jericho and Cody. I guess we're going to dive into right into all that now. Did you want to go?
No, we'll get into that as we go along, but I mean, yeah, it was a hell of a show overall, I thought.
And this is our first TV show with Fallout from a pay-per-view directly, right?
That was interesting too. I thought that they did a Fallout really well. They were responding to storylines and nice follow-ups. So let me tell you, listeners, we have a great show here. Every week here is a great show, to be honest with you. But this show, it's stacked to the brim. It's like a 3-hour episode of Raw, but a lot shorter and with better content.
I always love how everything is the biggest match in wrestling. I was just thinking about that. Like, everything is history making. Everything is important. Nothing is ever topped. Whatever match you're watching currently, right this moment, everything is always online. It's everything. Like, wrestling always feels, if it's good, like it's the season finale.
Well, that not only that, but in the case of WWE right now, it's like, this is the last time you will ever see this matchup until next month at Survivor Series.
Exactly.
So anyway, we got a big show lined up for you. Not only do we have our normal moments of the week, which we have plenty to choose from, we also have a special segment where we're going to discuss how far is too far in terms of hardcore wrestling. But first, we're going to dive into our three counts. Which first? The best in the world! Not Shane McMahon, but CM Punk finally had his appearance on WWE.
Chick Magnet Phil is back, and the internet, for whatever reason, still can't handle it. Which I want to say, if you are one of these people who have been chanting CM Punk every show, or you know, going to the internet and putting CM Punk whenever you have a complaint about WWE, and now turn to have a problem with him signing with Fox or WWE backstage and calling him a sellout, please go fuck yourself.
So, for those of you who did not see the end of WWE backstage this week on FS1, Renee Young had a little surprise at the end of the show. They had about 2 minutes left in the show, and she was kind of saying, there's a surprise. Booker T, Adam Cole, baby! Samoa Joe, Paige, they really had no idea what was going on. They were kind of wondering what was happening. And then Living Colors, Cult of Personality hits and comes out. The one, the only CM Punk. And he yells into the camera, just when they think they have the answers, I change the culture. See you next week. And that was the end of the show. It was a hell of a way to end. They had some backstage stuff where they saw them kind of hanging out. Now, before we dive too deep into this, I do want to address something. A lot of people are going, I never thought Punk would return to WWE. Or they're even, I have a friend who's always joking about, like, now he has to cash in on, like, all those proclamations that he made about how, like, yeah, I'll do that when CM Punk returns to WWE. You know, it's like the new, like, when pigs fly type thing. And I'm like, but technically, he has not. So this, and we mentioned it previously on our podcast, this has really nothing to do with WWE. I mean, yes, he's talking about WWE, but he's not working for WWE.
Not directly, but here's also the kind of beautiful thing. WWE had to give their blessing on it at some point.
Sure.
I mean, I don't think they're ever going to just let them hire whomever they wanted. Like, I mean, if this was back in the day, you know, when, you know, Jim Hellwig, aka The Warrior, still alive, and if they didn't want him on their TV, they wouldn't give Fox their blessing or whomever that they had a direct problem with. So I think they knew that this was a good move, you know, regardless. If Fox did push for it, WWE had to still say, okay, and then, yeah, we'll let that happen.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's very, very accurate. So I think that, but I think that's a reason why this kind of works is because he's not working directly under Hunter's staff, Vince. So I think he's more likely to work with something like this because he doesn't have to work with the things about the company that frustrate him. And at the same time, I think they're more likely because they don't have to work with him. So they really don't care. And so here's the thing. Let me just talk about this real quickly. I know last week we had this whole comment about wrestling journalism, and so we're going to take everything that Meltzer says with a grain of salt. But that being said, he supposedly had reported that Punk had actually met with Tony Khan shortly before he signed the deal with FS1 and was offered a very lucrative deal, and Punk turned it down. Now, what this tells me is that this is because he has zero interest in actually wrestling. Yeah. Now, Punk has not only done this, but he's also done commentary for UFC and done analysis type of shows for UFC as well. So I think this is really where he wants his career to go. I firmly believe that if he had any interest in stepping in the ring, he probably would have went to AEW, not only because there's guys there that he's friends with, but there are guys in WWE he's still friends with. But the big thing is that he wouldn't have to deal with like the BS creative that he was so frustrated with most of his time. But lastly, and we're seeing a lot of this that's going around, he's 41, okay? And I know that Shawn Michaels was 41, like, I think...
He came back when he was 37.
Well, yes, but he was 41, like, in the middle of that. So he was... I looked it up. He was 41 during the revival of DX.
Yeah.
And so he was 41 during a lot of parts of his run, and yes, but Michaels was also kind of like a really good athlete and stuff. Punk has always been, not that he has bad cardio because he's done Iron Man matches, but he's never been known for his like insane athletic ability. It was more about the psychology of wrestling.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I would rather remember him and be disappointed by how his career ended than see him have this kind of comeback and it's just not how we remember it. So let's just, and we've seen so much of that in recent memory. So let's just kind of leave all of that alone. And I'm a strong believer in moving on because I'd rather leave it at that. Now, Rollins, we'll talk about this here. Rollins recently tweeted, "Fight me, CM Punk." And then not only did FS1 say, "Come to the studio," and he said, "Buy me a ticket," but then Ricochet responded and said, "I got next."
I mean, here's the thing. I agree with you. I think if he was interested in wrestling, he might have went with AEW. But I also kind of look at this the same way when, you know, when Sting did the WWE 2K cover and then Goldberg, it was kind of like their toe in the water with the company. Because I believe Sting had his deal with 2K before it was actually with WWE. If I'm wrong on that, I'll eat my hat on that. But I think that's how he kind of got his foot in the company at the first initially.
I think, though, when they did that, there was always a plan to do that.
And like I say, I'm not saying that Punk is going to wrestle, but I feel like if he does decide to go that, I don't feel like the door is closed on that. But that's really going to be up on his end if he ever decides to do that. Because, I mean, I know this has all been surrounding this whole Fox deal when he's been a lot more open to discuss wrestling, even though he said he's never actually flat out told anyone not to ask him questions about wrestling. People just kind of, you know, assume doing that. But I think that if he ever does, I don't think it's completely off the books. I don't think that if the money or the situation was right, and if he got that, let's say that WrestleMania main event that he pined for so long, we could see him in the ring again. But I think it all really just depends on what works best for him. Works for, you know, not to take a phrase from Triple H and Vince, but whatever's best for business for both parties.
Yeah.
So that's what I see with it. And also, like I said, it's very interesting. Cause like I said, I know he doesn't answer directly to anybody in the company, and right now with so much fodder to be discussed, it'd be very. I think this is good for wrestling and good for WWE specifically because they need to be held accountable for their content. So I think AEW, that's why I was really excited when that company even got, you know, talked into existence, because the idea of them having competition forces them to be better. Iron sharpens iron. So they have all this talent that they, you know, kind of fucked around with because they haven't had any, you know, really good creative to drive the company moving forward. Now they have a competition that, well, while they still haven't necessarily made that full, you know, switch to what we want, they've made strides. Like I said, we had WrestleMania last year, and it was pretty much what we all wanted, you know, as far as the three main events that they did put out. So I think with having somebody like Punk in a position with WWE backstage where he's allowed to say what he feels and hold this company responsible, and he's obviously somebody who has his kind of finger on the pulse of what the fans are really interested in. If these people pay attention to when he says things, it's going to make WWE kind of, you know, I think it's going to force them to kind of maybe change things a little bit creatively for them as well.
Yeah, I'm excited for this for two reasons. Outside of me just being a huge Punk fan, but biggest on this for two reasons. One is that I can't wait for him to do promo school.
It's going to be fun.
It's going to be so fun. It's going to be. I don't know if you guys saw this past one. We had
Samoa Joe, Gabriel Iglesias.
It was fantastic on both sides. Gabriel Iglesias brought it.
And he really did.
He was really good. And then Joe was like really short and not intense as he usually is, but it was effective. And so it was really fun to watch.
Joe's great on the mic, man.
Oh yeah. And so I'm really excited. And on a related note, that's my second reason. Is I'm excited for him to be paired with one of his old buddies, which is Samoa Joe. For those who do not know, not only did they have tons of matches back in the Ring of Honor days, but they were like really good pals. In fact, there's a few shoot interviews that you can see of them being interviewed like together, and you can just see how good friends they are.
I'm also, because you know at some point, Heyman's going to work his way on that show. So we're going to have the reunion of Punk and Heyman on screen. I'm excited for any of those moments that we're going to actually see moving forward.
Though I will say, hopefully none of those friendships have been hurt in the last 4 years.
I think the one that we all know about with Colt Cabana was the only one that really suffered.
Yeah, I know there was like some, not like deep friendships, but there were like some acquaintances that he's not as cool with.
Him anymore. And Graves, I had some sort of weird falling out.
Jericho was the same. Like, they're not as tight anymore. Because I think Punk's thing, like, and I don't know the guy, so I could be wrong. I think there's just always a lot of miscommunication with him because I think he's a really intense dude and he's had so many people hurt him in the past that, like, when somebody does something, he just not assumes, but he is afraid that that's what they're doing. Because I know that Jericho reached out to him to talk to him, and apparently Punk thought that he was just trying to get him on his podcast.
Yeah.
And so I understand where they're both coming from, but I think there's a miscommunication with a lot of his stuff.
I think he's one of those people who doesn't want anyone profiting off of his name, off of his story without, you know, him having direct input or having any kind of control over it. And not that I think that Jericho was going to go out there and spin his story or for his own benefit just for clicks, but I think he thought that he was trying to latch on, you know, for whatever reason.
Yeah. So in a previous episode, we had a special segment planned on the whole Jordan Miles controversy with the shirt that appeared to be a blackface. Well, there's been quite an update. So Jordan Miles apparently
has
quit WWE. He posted a very angry and upset Twitter video saying that he has quit the place, and he labeled them as a racist company and said that they are quote unquote holding our people back. Now, after this, he posted another tweet which featured a video, and this has since been deleted, where he clarifies everything that he said, and he said that it wasn't just about race, but it was also about overall culture and how older wrestlers would treat younger wrestlers poorly. He said, "I am tired of the way that wrestling culture is today. They don't treat the younger guys with respect. All of the old guard walking around here thinking that we owe them something because they've taken a couple more bumps than us, that's bullshit. I'm tired of it. This is for the culture, not just for African Americans, but for everybody that has ever felt like they couldn't do anything in their life. This is much bigger than pro wrestling. This is way much bigger than WWE, Vince McMahon, Triple H, NXT, SmackDown, Raw. This is bigger than life. This is a stand, and me and the people will take it to the world so that we will take it to their throats first." So I just want to say, I mentioned in a previous segment that he had some valid points with what he was talking about and what he was frustrated with WWE for and their ignorance towards race. But this was interesting because it was the comments on treating the younger talent with respect that kind of lost me on this. And if he wants to quit WWE over it, and if he felt that they were being racist towards him, totally respect that. That's totally fine. But I kind of had an issue with how he's saying it was frustrating that they had to earn the respect of the older vets in the industry. I mean, that's kind of just a rite of passage in any industry, man. I mean, that's how it works. Look, people are not going to respect you for the second you walk into the door. I'm not saying that he's a liar or he's like a complainer or anything, but you sort of lose your argument to me when you start to sound like you can't take criticism or you can't deal with the idea that you have to earn your respect years before the older guard accepts you as one of your own. I'm, as I said, not calling him a liar, not saying his whole argument is invalid, but it comes off to me like he just couldn't hack it.
There's a lot to kind of poke holes in his argument when you kind of sit and look at everything. Like I said, it has nothing to do with whether I believe him or don't believe him or not. But when he labeled the whole company as racist, I kind of took issue with that because you can't just poke at the entire company. And I think when you say that, you throw a lot of other people under the bus who still work for that company. By saying, are they just standing by? I mean, he made the whole Uncle Tom comment about Jay Lethal, obviously somebody who's not signed with WWE. But to label that entire company when you have people who are African-American or many different races who have, worked with the company, still work, in front of the camera, behind the camera, doesn't really matter. To kind of get that blanket statement, it damages a lot. It throws a lot of people on the bus when you say that. Aside from also the fact, if you're complaining about, feeling like you're being held down by older talent, he was in NXT. I mean, the only older talent that is generally there are the people who are coaches that are there to kind of help people along. Now, if you can't be taught, if you're not in a position where you don't feel comfortable being trained, taught, coached, criticized, then performance art is not really for you. Mm-hmm. I know there's a lot, there was talks of, him possibly, trying to shop around. I don't know what company would be really quick to pick him up.
Supposedly, I don't know what the source is, but AEW has zero interest, and they consider him untouchable.
I don't blame him. I mean, he's too volatile of a personality, I think, at this point, especially with AEW giving their talent the free reign to go on the mic and kind of say what they want. You really don't know what this guy's going to say or how he's going to be working with him if, moving forward, if you do something, he's going to take that as racially offensive or in any way and just run off fly off the handle. I don't even know if he actually quit. Because I also heard there was a report that he was actually fired. And then after I heard that report, that's when his Twitter went down and was deactivated.
Yeah, it's all kind of weird because I wonder if something changed, if there was a sudden conversation that triggered all of this.
It was about a week ago or so, like a little bit over a week ago, he made some post saying, WWE has one day to contact me or I'm going to, expose them or, say something, do something to drive this whole narrative further. The next day he didn't come out and say anything else. I'm assuming there was some sort of conversation that was behind closed door. But here we are a week later and he's quote unquote quit.
He was supposedly, and this is all hearsay, but there was word that they were planning on tying a lot to him. They were going to shoot into the moon. Like, supposedly he was going to be one of the next big NXT dudes.
He won that breakout tournament. Like I said, they did this whole tournament with all these guys that we're seeing on TV now to kind of, introduce these new guys. And he won the tournament, got the title match against Adam Cole. He was featured prominently as, a big person to keep your eyes on. So I can't see, obviously none of his accusations of racism had anything to do with how his character was being portrayed in the ring aside from the merch they were possibly going to release.
Right.
But I don't see, like I said, anything that we've seen, there was nothing about how he was presented that I thought that made him look weak or anything of that nature. So maybe we'll never know fully the story. Maybe he'll come out and say his piece. Mm-hmm. I don't think WWE is going to touch it after this is point. I mean, it might be something I can possibly see being brought up on backstage if the right person is asked.
Or after the bell.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see it. Yeah. But I've never always agreed with WWE's things and how they've treated women and people of color. But to call them across the board racist, I think is too broad or too... It's not a fair statement.
Yep, I agree. And my last statement is I understand that maybe you feel like you're the person taking the stand, but however, I do want to say if they are supposedly like this racist company, like so terrible in comparison to other companies, like why do we have still a decent amount of wrestlers of female or color that succeed and stay there for so long? Now, granted, are they held back a little bit, I believe? Yeah. But they still do succeed in a sense. So what was it that they were able to kind of deal with that? Because I imagine if they are truly racist, they would have dealt with similar things.
Right. And I said, the black experience when you're working with any kind of company or any kind, when you're trying to, assimilate or be a part of any kind of culture is always a little bit different from, when you're one of few. But I think WWE and wrestling in general has kind of grown so much when you see so many, like I said, we see more people of color on both, not just black, but, Hispanic, Asian, Middle Eastern descent. You see more women, who are pushed out there aside as not just people, something to look at, physically, but some, you know, as performers and athletes in their own right. I think the culture of WWE has changed, and yeah, a lot of that has taken a long time, and maybe a little bit later than it has been in other places. How WCW crowned their first world champion, Black world champion, in the 80s. But like I said, slow, yes. Ignorant, possibly. Hateful, racist, I don't see that.
Yeah, I don't. What I always, unless somebody is literally racist from like a mentally ill standpoint, I don't see how you can be around people of color and certain cultures and still be racist after that long. Like people like Triple H, like I don't know about, now Vince lived in a different time, so who knows? But I mean, people like Triple H, Stephanie, they've been around people of so many different races that I don't see how you could be racist.
I don't see that being an issue. I will give the benefit of the doubt, say there's probably some ignorance and lack of representation where things like that shirt can get through, you know, can somehow be created without somebody saying like, hey, this is a bad look. That's why I mean, that's why I say lack of representation. There should have been somebody in the channel or somebody who saw that t-shirt in creative, whoever, whatever merchandise, and be like, that's probably not a good idea.
Yep, I agree. So Survivor Series is November 22nd, so it's coming right up. And we finally have the full rosters for the two Raw and SmackDown teams that are going to be in the Survivor Series match, the main one. And in my opinion, they're a little lopsided, but I'll get your take on this soon. So on one side, we have Raw, which is Seth Rollins, Randy Orton, Kevin Owens, Ricochet, and Drew McIntyre. It's a pretty stacked team all around. And then they have to go up against Roman Reigns, King Corbin, Braun Strowman, Mustafa Ali, and Shorty G. Now, we do not have the NXT teams finalized yet. We have kind of a rough idea who they are, but no finalization on those teams yet, which will be featured in this match to make it a triple threat. What do you make of the teams?
I think, for the most part, evenly matched. I am not. I love Chad Gable. I don't know if it's just because they got him dressed like one of the Toon Squad lately, or the the whole idea of like him dry snitching to Roman last week about Baron talking shit about him in the ring. I'm not a big fan of the presentation of the character yet. No. I mean, I definitely, he can go. I mean, there's no one will ever say that Chad Gable's not great in the ring, but I think that character, at the very least, seems like the odd man out to me.
Completely.
Other than that, I think they're pretty evenly matched. I think the one thing is SmackDown is way more babyface, at least on the outside looking in. Yeah. You know, Randy Orton. He kind of lives in this tweener heel, place. Even when he's a good guy, he's still pretty much Randy Orton. Drew McIntyre, like I said, God bless the guy. I see him as he could be a top heel on any show if they just push him the right way. But, you know, obviously I think he's definitely one of the bigger threats on that team as well. You got, obviously, Seth, and you got Ricochet. So I would give them the advantage, you know, on the offset. But I think what we really need to see is how NXT is going to look flushing out, especially since a lot of the guys you could assume being on that match are also going to be coming from War Games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my issue with it is that the SmackDown side, there's two dudes who I just don't take that seriously, and that's Mustafa Ali and Shorty G. Like, Mustafa, especially when there's two of them. Like, if just one of those guys was on that team, I'd be okay with that, because it's good to have that kind of, like, X-Factor type guy. But there's two of them, and so it just kind of, because if you look at the first team, it's Orton, let's start from the beginning. It's Seth, who was just Universal Champion. It's Randy Orton, who's a legend. It's Kevin Owens, who's won world titles and it just had a huge program with Shane. It's Ricochet, who is one of the most respected dudes in the business as far as the athletic ability goes. And it's Drew McIntyre, who we both said is a very intimidating guy and could easily be put in the world title picture, and people would not blink an eye. And they go up against Roman Reigns, who, yeah, former world champion. King Corbin, which, yeah, I mean, sure, he's not been treated the best, but I mean,
still is the king of the ring.
He's been doing really well lately, and I think if you put him now in a world title match, I would accept it. Before, I wasn't, but now I would. And then Braun Strowman, obviously, he's been tons of world title matches. And then you have Mustafa Ali and Shorty G, which I would question if I even take them seriously in an Intercontinental or US title match.
I've already said my piece about Shorty G. I'm of a different opinion of Ali, or Mustafa Ali, since he did just get his first name back. What is it that you're not sold on with him yet? What is it?
There's nothing he's done that I buy into. Like, he doesn't do... He's athletic, but, like, he doesn't do anything in the ring that, like, wows me. And I think his entrance is overcompensating. I don't think he's earned that entrance. I think it just showed up with it one day and he just had it. I think you have to earn your entrance first and then you get that big entrance. And I, like I said, like there's nothing about him as a character that's interesting to me.
I think what kind of got me into him is, you know, when they first did bring him out to SmackDown and had him work with Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
Even though a bit of a botch that match, but I think Bryan has been on this whole run since he turned heel of just putting everybody over. I think Mustafa was one of the people who benefited from that early on. It kind of got my interest. There was not been a lot of follow through on that though, so I agree with you in that term. But I think that like I'd put him just right up there as far as what he does. Like I think one of his highlights was the Money in the Bank match this year. As one of the other moments, he had a lot of moments in that match that kind of sold me on him athletically in the ring. I also am a big fan of the fact that, you know, since historically WWE has taken characters of Middle Eastern descent and made them all heels, yeah. All the big foreign menace heels, and they're actually going with him as a baby face and, yeah. You know, trying
it's
to.
It's not part of his identity. like no, they're not constantly bringing up the fact that he's Indian or
absolutely
like, you know, like yeah. Anything like that.
And I like that. Like they're treating him differently in that aspect, and that I can appreciate.
Yeah,
I would like to see a little bit more forward momentum in the way that they've done with like Ricochet. But at the same time, would you compare? I would say Ali is the same spot that I think Cedric Alexander is.
Right see, now. All right, here's the deal. So there's two reasons with Ali. One is that. It seemed that out of nowhere, he just all of the sudden was going up against main event dudes. And I didn't get it. I'm like, why all of the sudden is he fighting, these guys in the main event as a part of this like underdog storyline? He didn't have this moment where he was like fighting for titles and kind of feuding in the mid card. And then they give this up.
Because he had him beat Daniel Bryan when he first got introduced.
Yeah. He didn't have this thing where the crowd can get behind him a lot, and then they put him up there and they're really behind him. They're just like, hey, get behind him right now.
He was obviously the plan to get to Fastlane.
Yeah, and so that's part one of the problem. And I will be honest, because I'm not a liar, and I will always tell you the truth. Part of it's bitterness.
What are you bitter with Ali? What did Mustafa Ali do to you?
It should have been Cedric. It's like Dolph Ziggler. It should have been me!
Well, and I said, there's a lot of controversy in WWE because they always feel when people they take the win-loss record in WWE differently than anywhere else.
Yeah.
Because everyone assumes that Cedric is being buried, even though he's been a lot of TV time spending with AJ Styles in the ring, which.
And he's had like three straight with Buddy Murphy.
Yeah. So like to say that he's, you know, being buried, I think is a bit much.
Well, it's weird because he's not being buried. I agree with that. But it's strange because he's constantly being put because him and Buddy are put in like long matches. Like they're not just like, hey, go out there for 5 minutes and wrestle. They're getting like good slots for weekly TV. Mm-hmm. Like they're having pay-per-view quality matches. Now it's strange that they're doing that and he's consistently losing. That's a little frustrating, but it's just a weird situation. I'm like, I'm for it because I think the more you get this dude on TV, like, the better. I think he has one of the most underrated finishers in all of WWE.
I love the lumbar break. Lumbar check, yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely phenomenal. I think that with work, he can develop into an all-around wrestler. Like, his mic work leaves a lot to be desired. And he doesn't really have a character. He's just, you know, a good wrestler, you know. But a lot of those things, a lot of those weaknesses that I just mentioned are weaknesses, in my opinion, to Ali as well. And Cedric is a better wrestler, and he is a lot more interesting to me because of how he came into WWE. I think that's the biggest thing is that, I don't know how Ali came in, but we all remember Cedric Alexander had this ridiculous match with, what was the guy?
Kota Ibushi?
Yeah, Kota. He had this amazing match with Kota. And the crowd chanted, please sign Cedric, please sign Cedric. And Triple H kind of gave a thumbs up, basically. And he was signed, like, not immediately, but he was signed fairly soon after losing in, I think, it was second or third round.
Something like that.
And so it's kind of like this really kind of grassroots organization to sign this dude. Well, and I love that story.
Ali was in that same tournament. He was actually a replacement for someone else during that time. He was still working as a cop, I think, when he got the call from WWE.
I do remember the cop thing, yeah.
I just don't think he had that moment that, that Cedric had, and that's probably why you're kind of.
And I think another thing is honestly, like, he doesn't have, as I said, nothing jumps out to me about him. Like, I like the entrance and the Sub-Zero shit, but like, I'm also like, God, I wish it was for something, someone I cared about, because there's things about him like I want to like, but then he just kind of is kind of bleh in other ones. Like, I've seen the 450 100 times. Like, it's just, it's not special to me anymore, you know?
I do like that Roland, like, X-Factor thing he does.
Yes,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so moving forward, that was our three count. We're going to talk about our moments of the week, where we kind of talk about our favorite moment of the week of Raw, SmackDown, NXT, AEW, and any pay-per-view that might have happened, which we did have one this week. So, what was yours?
Mine will be the betrayal of Cody at the hands of MJF at Full Gear this week. I refuse to call it a heel turn because that's not what it was. We've all known that MJF was a heel.
It was the clarification of the kind of human being he is.
Yeah, which this is what I did love. Because I think, and things where you, obviously the audience kind of sees where things like this go. I don't think anyone had bought in that MJF was a true friend to Cody, the character. But the way this was executed was perfect. Like I said, anything that Cody does, usually storytelling wise, where he's involved in, is always usually executed well. And I can definitely see why he hitched his wagon to MJF leading up to this. Obviously, I think the writing was on the wall, and it was actually on the Twitter news feed, because MJF made the tweet that on November 9th, a star will be born. Which, true indeed, he was. His performance throughout that match. The, you know, even the way his look on his face as Cody was in the Lion Tamer and he, you know, throws in the towel and everything, down to the kicking the balls and just breathing the moment in and, you know, walking up the ramp. And like, it was just so well executed. It left me excited for what we had this go home show, which it did not disappoint. His promo in the ring with Chris Jericho was amazing. And they were reminiscent to the promo after Survivor Series years ago, 2016, with Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho, when they like both were, you know, who's the problem here? Let's both say the problem with Cody. Who's the biggest jackass in AEW? Cody Rhodes. They did the same, like, yeah.
They said Rhodes.
Yeah, Rhodes. Yeah, because I think Cody has already said that he can use the Rhodes name anytime he wanted. I think he's been using a lot of this time since his exit from WWE to build the Cody name.
Okay.
And yes, I mean, it's one of those things, like, we can't hide the fact that you're Dusty Rhodes' kid. We all know that he's Dusty Rhodes' kid. But I think it's definitely cool that you get crowds chanting Cody.
Yeah.
Instead of Cody Rhodes or Dusty or anything that's not anything. He's made his own, he's made himself a character aside from his legacy.
Yeah.
And that I respect about Cody. Also, another tip to Cody in that gnarly fucking bump he took outside the ring, which Wilkins, I'll talk about that later when we do our hardcore system, but I will say, if that was a hard way, which I'm like 90% sure that was a hard way bust, like, those are the kind of things that scared me.
Yeah,
that was nasty looking, but I definitely think that moving forward, I'm really excited to see MJF and, what was this guy's name? The guy who came in and jump Cody, the guy we've been seeing vignettes for. I mean, he I thought it was a nice touch. He was wearing a Burberry tie, I'm very excited to see now that we have him at, instead of 95% heel, 100% heel. MJF, I think he's going to be definitely a great foil for Cody moving forward, whatever story they tell. And also with the whole world title thing, I definitely feel like the same way as we did last week. If this ever does come to a thing where Cody is put in a position where the fans want him to be champion, that's going to drive the narrative even further. Like, if it's one thing everyone's clamoring for, and like I said, you know, this is bigger than you, Cody. The whole company wants you to be champion. The fans want you to be champion. If we're not listening to them, if he can get the audience that fever pitch where they want it so bad, they want him to renege on his contract, then the story is beautiful. And if they never do come to that point, he ends up never fighting for the championship, then he's proven what his dedication is to this business and building this company rather than just going out there and getting himself over.
Yeah, I thought that turn was great, and I not only that, but I felt that the promo on the following Wednesday was absolutely fantastic from both of them. And MJF, like, the second he walked in, he has such, I don't even know how to describe it, but the bravado and like intent that he has with every word he speaks is so good. And he can be funny and like all that stuff, and it doesn't matter. The fans will still boo him because he is like you can't teach how good he is at like insulting fans.
He's better than you, and he knows it.
He knows how to like toe that line of going too far because he's had some insult that was like, whoa, boy, that's even for TNT. So my moment of the week, that one was very close. My moment of the week was everything that Jon Moxley did. So we are going to get into the match with Omega later, but I thought it was great. Past that, I thought his promo to open the show basically on Dynamite was also great. Now, he had a little kind of squash match right before that, which was fantastic because he has a squash match. And if you guys remember, Tony Khan like made this announcement like, oh, your match is not going to count against the win-loss record. And he was all pissed off about it because he's going to have this epic feud and it's not even going to fucking count. And so he comes out, he has a squash match, and he picks the mic. He's like, does that count? And so that was just great. So I thought his promo was fantastic. And what was so great about it was that he had the crowd in the palm of his hands. They were chanting Moxley like so loud, and they were completely behind him the second he walked in that ring. It was amazing. It thrills my heart to see moments like that, whether it's a guy that I love or not. Just to see a guy get that type of reaction is amazing. He's the ultimate star that AEW needs him to be. He said said the one thing that I tweeted out in Full Gear, which is, this man is not a liar. And I'll get into this with the hardcore stuff. But this man said he was going to do some things. He did those things. He proved that he is the baddest son of a bitch on this planet. He proved that he is crazy. He has proved that you don't want to step in the ring with this man because you don't know what he's going to do. And he mentioned that in the promo, and I thought it was fantastic. Now, building on that, he dared anyone that has the guts to step in the ring with him to come to him. And he basically built this narrative that nobody would even be dumb enough to get into a ring with him.
No one has the balls.
Yes, because you saw what he did to Kenny Omega, who he didn't say is, but I mean, Kenny Omega is like the top guy in arguably AEW and arguably all of wrestling. So if he can't even hack it, who else would? Well, later in the show, Darby Allin had a match, and afterwards, he challenged Jon Moxley. He just simply said, Jon Moxley, I accept. And these two are going to have a match next week, which is going to be incredible, I believe. It is the perfect juxtaposition of characters. A guy who will do anything, and a guy who will take anything. I mean, to me, it's really similar to me to Triple H versus Cactus Jack.
I was going to say Triple H versus Jeff Hardy, but I also see.
I mean, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of that too. Now, I wish they'd hold this off towards a pay-per-view, but I mean, who knows? We might get stuff where they kind of use this to build towards a pay-per-view match. But nonetheless, I'm excited to see what happens next week.
I feel like, because I mean, I know pay-per-view is going to be very more spread out. So, I mean, I'm assuming the next pay-per-view that we have is going to be in 2020. Also, interesting note, they're also resetting all the win-loss records next year, which I think is going to be an interesting thing.
Yes.
Darby and Moxley is money. I think it's a good feud to build on or to keep Moxley busy in these months leading into a pay-per-view because for my money's worth, I think he's the obvious choice for the next contender for the AEW title, for a major contender, like, you know, for a pay-per-view.
No doubt.
Maybe whether or not he wins that title, because I see the title on Jericho and for a long time. I can actually see him going all the way back around to Hangman before he ends up losing it altogether. Just because I think they're very much on building the story there, and I don't think there's anyone else because they're trying to build people. And I think the person who does take the title off of AEW should be somebody who's not been a world champion anywhere.
Yeah,
who is a talent who they're building. It shouldn't be another guy who's already over from somewhere else. Whether that be from New Japan, it shouldn't be Omega, it shouldn't be Moxley necessarily yet. I mean, I think these guys will have their time with the title, but anybody else who's already been world champion, I think the next guy should be an underdog.
Here's what I'll say. I don't completely agree, but I kind of agree. I think there is a world where you can give it to those guys who are already established before, but not just building on their old establishment. So if they're basically just building off of that and that's where they are. But if, like, Omega brings a whole other element to his game and he elevates himself as, like, an even bigger star than he was before, then I get it. Then I'm for it because you're eventually building on – in that sense, you're building on something new. Okay. So We're going to move on to our special segment of the week. So as a lot of you know, we had a unsanctioned, over-the-top, ridiculous, some call garbage wrestling match between Jon Moxley and Kenny Omega. This was interesting. A lot of people hated it. A lot of people also just said it wasn't their cup of tea. A lot of people liked it. A lot of people loved it. It was a very polarizing match, to say the least. Like, this was not a situation like, you know, The Fiend and Bray Wyatt were just like, a lot of people were just visibly upset. It was like, it literally just created a lot of discord between people. And I think a lot of the communication on it was not just, you know, I didn't like the match, but it was also, this shouldn't have happened. This wasn't necessary. This doesn't have a place in wrestling. There was a lot of that too. So what I'll say real quick, and we're going to go back and forth on this, is that I believe this is what we were building towards. And so I was kind of surprised, honestly, me. And I'm not going to be a popular guy in this segment because I'm going to say some things that are going to rub some people the wrong way. But that's what it is. So this wasn't as bad, in my opinion, as people claimed it was. I find it strange that we complained about how this was not necessary and over the top. But we're fine with Cody constantly giving himself head injuries.
Are we? I'm not, personally. That's a personal thing for me.
But I'm not saying people are fine with it. Like, they're like, oh, yeah, that should keep happening. But they're not in an uproar. They're not clamoring.
No, you're right. I cringed at, I was cringing at that Cody bump very long. Because I think that was the appetizer for that match.
Here's the thing, is that they talk about how unsafe it is, and they're talking about all this stuff, but I'm like, what I saw was not even close to as bad as what happened to Cody, not only that night, but at All Out.
Yeah.
Like, constantly. So, the gash he received there was against Jericho was far worse than anything that came down. Ultimately, what it comes down to for me is, this seemed bad. Yes, I totally get that. This seemed bad. It seemed like it took years off their careers. Which is why it was successful, in my opinion, because it seemed like these things. But in reality, these guys got some cuts. You know, they got some. Maybe there's a few spots they need to stitch up a little bit. And it's nothing to shrug about. It's nothing to say, oh, no big deal. But it's not like we're talking about broken body parts. It's not like we're talking about concussions or anything that's going to shorten a dude's career. It's not something we should do week in and week out. It's not even something we should do pay-per-view to pay-per-view. But I have no problem with doing this every once in a while. I mean, here's an honest question. I respect the fact that this may not be everyone's cup of tea. I respect your opinion, but I just find it to be a hypocritical and self-serving. How is this match so terrible and unnecessary? But for some reason, Shane McMahon falling off of Hell in the Cell, no one had an uproar about. No one was clamoring saying, this is unnecessary. This should never happen. I'm not saying that people were like, oh, yes, Shane, do it again, do it again, do it again. No, they weren't. But I don't think that people were like clamoring about it. Like, this is, they weren't calling it garbage wrestling. That's the first thing. I mean, okay. Same thing with Kevin Owens being pushed off ladders. People were talking about how it was a spectacle. That's my point. This is a spectacle. It's creating an image that you won't forget. It's creating an image that's shocking to you. Now, maybe that's not something you enjoy. That's fine. It's like some people don't like horror movies. They don't like movies with a lot of gore or stuff like that. Sure, that's understandable. That's fine. It doesn't totally demean, because that's another reason I have a problem with it, is I feel like they're demeaning the competitors that took place in it. They're insulting them by saying that. So for me, those previous spots that I mentioned, they went much farther than this. Now, if your complaint is storytelling, if your complaint that this isn't wrestling, that it's just two dudes doing a bunch of hardcore spots, fine. But I will disagree with you, because I feel like there is a clear narrative of us seeing who Jon Moxley is and why he should be feared and why Omega should be respected by going through this, because he was a wrestler, and now he's kind of doing this crazy hardcore stuff. But let's just say that you didn't get that. Let's say you didn't. That's not what you took from this. Okay, fine. That's fine. But how is the spot-to-spot-to-spot style of a match here different than what the Young Bucks are doing, which is just a... Why are you creaming in your pants over that crap when it's just glorified gymnastic? But then when we look at this, it's like weapons porn. I don't understand how one thing is just terrible and it's not wrestling, and then the other thing is just like, oh, no, it's fun. It's harmless.
I think we live in a generation, we're in the Yelp generation, where everyone has to find some reason to complain about something, so people just can't be happy. Now, I went and I watched this match twice, and the things I can pick at this match for have nothing to do with it being too hardcore. My whole idea of this is supposed to be quote-unquote unsanctioned, and or something that's not sponsored by the company, and then who put together the board full of mousetraps? Like, was it just something that our mousetraps believe that John did this on his
own? Do not know Kenny Omega's hobbies?
I mean, those are little things that I was like, that's neither here nor there. Like you said, I don't see how you can really complain about this match from a storytelling point of view. You can say... People always say, "Oh, when you have these death matches or these, you know, whatever hardcore matches, that you want a lot of narrative to build them." To me, I mean, not that WWE would ever do this, but this is the match that Seth and Dean should have had after Dean turned on him at TLC.
Yep,
that was, and to me, that was the kind of intensity what I would like to see in that kind of a match rather than this, because I feel like this could have had one more match before we got to this point. Just in my opinion.
That's fair.
We could have had one more match between Omega and Moxley before we go, let's murder each other. Because it started off more as a machismo or Moxley saying, you know, I got to take the best guy on here and I got to drive him into the ground because it showed you that I'm the best. And that's kind of like, I like the whole idea that I'm not looking for somebody who's going to bring the best out of me. I'm looking for somebody who's going to bring the worst out of me. And you can drive in that violent nature of Jon Moxley's character without a hardcore match and then lead to another match later down the line where this could all transpired. But like I said, I don't have a problem with the match itself. Because I'm from the generation where Shane was getting thrown off of everything. I mean, Mick Foley's, you know, ear being gnawed off in a match with Vader and the ropes. Thumbtacks, all this kind of stuff, is things that were more commonplace. I think a lot of the younger fans today have gotten the WWE PG version of hardcore up until this point, where this is not commonplace for the average fan now. So when you see something like this, people get all in there, oh my god, no, because this isn't what your palate, your taste has been built on. If you became a fan in 2002, you know what I mean?
Well, that's what I don't get, is because when I first saw the reactions, that's what I figured. I figured it was people who were maybe like 25, 24, maybe people who didn't grow up with what we grew up with. But I was seeing a lot of reactions from people who were either my age or a little older even. Like, there was a former referee with WWE who said it has no place in wrestling.
I mean, you're going to, like I said, that's... People said the same thing about Mick Foley, probably, too.
Yeah, they did.
I mean, exactly. I mean, he was literally using explosives in the ring at some point. But
Ric Flair called him a glorified stuntman.
Yeah. I mean, to disregard what these guys do, because like I said, it's still the end of the day, it's very dangerous. You're putting your body through hell for the entertainment of other people. So, well, it might not be the technical catch-as-catch-can wrestling style or a five-star classic that you're going to get from, you know, typically from all your Omegas and things like that. I definitely think this has a place in wrestling. The only thing I can say they didn't have, because like I said, I would have done one more match before this, before we went this far, but that's just me.
So with that, you said that earlier, and I wrote something down. I thought that at first, when this match happened, because when you talk about this feud, I imagined a back and forth over the span of like 6 months.
It's about more machismo. But what do you think this feud is built on?
Here's where it changed for me, and I think it was when they made it unsanctioned. I think that's where it changed for me, because then there was a different story added to it. And this is what I wrote down. And it became, with me, Moxley proving a point. Is that if you really think that I'm...
If you want to make me a freak show, I'll show you a freak show.
Yeah. Kind of thing. And I think it was also kind of, this was him getting it out of his system. This was the Lesnar match. This is what he wanted. I think this is what he wanted to a T, and I'm not saying this match is perfect. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not saying this is match of the year. I'm not saying it's five stars. There was issues I had, most notably the two. One, I was not a big fan of, like, the mousetraps thing.
I mean, it made me laugh, but at the same time, I was kind of like, what? Because
it was nothing else in the match was like that.
Yeah.
Everything else that was hardcore was, like, serious. Like, oh, my God. And then that one was just kind of like preposterous.
Yeah.
But I absolutely love the crawling through the glass thing. That brought me back to the John McClane thing, mm-hmm. where he talked about that's what he wanted to do, and that was very much John McClane crawling through glass in Die Hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love that, and I thought that that was great.
The ending to me was perfect. I love
it. Okay, yeah, and so that was the best part, but also the one part that I will critique. Like, the ending was great. It was very reminiscent of Gargano and Ciampa.
Mm-hmm.
My only issue, and this is very nitpicky, this is the stuff that holds me back between like 4 stars and 5 stars, because I also may give it 4 stars, is that I think that the rhythm of the finish could have been better, because it was like Omega misses that one move, and then Moxie kind of slowly gets him up, hits the elevated paradigm shift, and then pins him. I think, you know, it's better if they would have been like a struggle maybe, and then he kind of hits the paradigm shift suddenly,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to like it kind of just being that slow pull him up, hit him with one more move, then pin him. That's like a nitpicky thing. That's just something that like I would have adjusted. But still, as far as like the storytelling of finishing the match, where in a sense Omega screwed himself, you know, was a great way. And that's a great thing for Omega to take this loss, because he was kind of out of his element. So you can't blame the dude for losing a match where but you got to give him credit, because he was doing stuff that you've never seen him do before.
Absolutely, and that's kind of why I said I would have liked to seen. I'll ask you about this a little bit later, but after I get this point out, I would have liked to have seen one more match between them, because I would have loved to see them have like a straight up and down 20 sure. minute time limit match where Moxley would have won, and then it goes to unsanctioned hardcore, and in his out of his element, Omega does get the win over Moxley.
Interesting,
because those are the criticism of each character, is you know that Moxley is this hardcore freak show. He's blood and guts. All he's going to do is go in there and brutalize the guy. Where Omega's known as this polished technician in ring, you know, savant. And you know, if Moxie could have beat him in his element, and then Omega could turn around and done the same thing to him, then you have a different. You have, to me, a more fleshed out story with a lot more legs on it. Whereas as of right now, I don't know where they go. Is this right. is Omega done after that? Like,
I think we're going to take a break from this, and I'm not going to predict that they do, but I'm going to say that I hope they go back to this one day. Like, they go back to this eventually.
So, I want to go back, and I want to ask you this question again. What do you think this story was built on? Because to me, I thought it was a machismo thing, a macho thing, where, like, Moxie walks in the door of AEW. I'm going to take down the biggest fish, the best guy you guys got here, because sure. I got a point to prove, because I've been, you know, in captivity for X amount of years. It's time for me to show everybody that I am, you know, I am the best son of a bitch out here. So I'm picking the biggest fish and out here, and I'm going after him. And I thought in turn Omega was taking exception to that, to this guy who's coming over from the other company, as he put it initially, and he can't lose to a guy like this.
Yeah.
And where he was kind of even mocking him for getting injured in the G1 or any of the things that he was doing, whatever, or not being able to win the G1, where like, I felt it was more of a, not so much a blood feud, but it was a, you know, more of a like, I'm better than you and I'm going to prove it.
Yeah, I think it was for both guys, but especially for Moxley, it was a not personal feud. It's like, this isn't personal, but you're in my way and you're the guy who's at the top.
Mm.
And I'm here to prove not only to this company what I am, but I'm here to prove everybody wrong before. Mm-hmm. I'm here to show them who I really am. And I think that's ultimately what this was, is to show, this is who I am, this is what to expect.
Right, right. So that's why I have the problem with this match being hardcore. Not because I have a problem with the match itself.
Okay.
But I just feel that with it being not personal yet for either of them, because I felt like up until this point, Omega was mocking John the right. entire time. Yeah. It was more of a mock, and then when they jump into the whole unsanctioned thing, and I get the motivation of, fine, if you want a freak show, I'm going to show you a freak show. Kenny's ass is in your hands right now, yeah. whatever, all that. I like the resolution of where that went, but I also feel like if the story was built on something to prove, I don't feel like this was a point that we needed. I thought this was, you jumped a step. At least
see,
one, yeah.
I would argue that to, he was proving who he is, and this is who Moxley is.
But this is not, even like the character, like I said, this is why I'm also frustrated where we're going to go here, because the character John Moxley did not want this to be an unks. He wanted this to count. He needed this. Like, you know what I'm saying? So his frustration, like, I don't feel like he got what he wanted out of it. Yeah, he got to beat Omega, but that was, it wasn't personal with Omega. Not now. Now it is. It has to be. Would have to be.
Right.
With everything that they put each other through, this is now a personal feud. So it has to go somewhere. Even if it's not immediately, it has to go somewhere one day. But I don't think that Omega died for sins that he did not commit.
Yeah, I'm not on board with you completely, but I see where you're coming from with that, and that's not a terrible take. I'm not on board with it because I honestly that didn't even enter my mind.
Well, like I said, that's just I hate the devil's advocate thing, but that's right, just me looking at it from this. If anybody says that this match did not need to go there, because I didn't feel like this was a payoff that I wanted.
Sure,
like,
I think that that's a valid point to saying that this match specifically maybe didn't need to go there. But I think a lot of the narrative that's being driven is this match doesn't need to happen, like, ever.
No, that I don't agree with. Like I said, I think AEW does a really good job of really bringing back hardcore wrestling to the forefront. I like a match that sometimes makes me cringe. Like I said, the fucking paper cut spots they were doing at All Out and everything. Like, I hated it. I hated it so much that I loved it. Because I like those moments. Because, I go back to seeing people falling on tacks as a kid, and you get all cringy. You can feel those tacks, even though you're not the one taking those bumps. Like, that's what makes hardcore wrestling so great. So I definitely feel like the match itself has a place, but I feel like in this specific match, you know, where it was placed, that way it was booked, I just felt it was a little early for this feud specifically.
And I respect that. That's fine.
And like I said, I love both of them. And like I said, to a degree, there's a little part of the blood and guts in AEW that I'm starting to kind of worry about, but it had nothing to do with this match. Mine was more about Cody and that damn hard way bump.
Yes.
That terrifying. Like, I had that. That is right up there with what when they had Brock Hardway open
Randy
and John Cena and Roman Reigns. I was there for that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, those, when you're genuinely going to concuss somebody. Or, because I can only imagine. I don't think he was. If he actually was concussed, I don't see him being in the ring on Wednesday. It's just scary and disgusting and hard to look at when you see those kind of things for me. Because, like, it lifts open the curtain. And now we're real. Now I'm genuinely worried about Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's kind of where my problem has come in. I thought that some of these arguments have been a little self-serving, that they're trying to come off like they care about wrestlers and like stuff like this. Like, oh, it's not necessary to put them through that. And I'm like, there's guys who are doing 20 times worse. And so I'm gonna have my last point here, where I kind of just want to address the people who are having a problem with this. So, okay, first of all, a lot of people are referring, and you kind of made a slight reference to it. They're referring to this as like the death match and like all that shit. Here's my problem. Have you seen like an actual Japan like death match?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
It is like a lot worse than this. Absolutely. I think that's a bit much. So if you don't like this stuff, okay, that's fine. You're wrong, but that's fine. Just do me a favor. If you don't like this stuff and you feel the need to say it's not necessary, it has no place in wrestling, do not complain when a ref pauses a match because a wrestler's bleeding. Because I've seen some of you do that. Don't become upset when you feel that a product is too watered down. Because I've seen you do that. Don't call Brock Lesnar lazy if the exact same thing that Brock Lesnar was turning down just happened and you said it was too much. You've become what you hate. Soft.
You're absolutely right on that. You hit the nail right on the head, and that's... And it's also kind of the thing with the, like, Ricochet kind of made mention of this on Twitter recently, when he called the fans fickle. And that's coming from an uber babyface right now, but he just happens to not be the top guy in WWE.
Right.
So he's not going to, you know, be martyred for that.
Incredibly fickle.
Yeah, incredibly fickle. You hit it right on the head. We want these things. We want these true hardcore moments. We want the Attitude Era back. Now, people want to complain about the Lana and Rusev, Bobby Lashley segment for being, you know, distasteful or not that kind of Attitude Era that you want back. But on the other side of the coin, you have AEW doing this match, doing hardcore wrestling. Like I said, not necessarily Japanese death match level, yeah, but still, I would put it up there as far as ECW level.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's another problem I had, is because people were bringing that up. They were like, this is like ECW. And people were like, no, it's nothing like ECW. I was like, what was different?
Like, you know what I mean? It's definitely up there. That's one of the things I think people were said they missed. And that's what they delivered on that. Now, I'll I will fight. I don't have to necessarily agree with everything that anybody says, but I'll fight for their right to, you know, to believe. If wrestling is subjective, so if hardcore wrestling is not your thing, say that.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? If you're not, like I said, I was willing to excuse the fans who might have been younger, who may have not come up on the wrestling that you and I grew up. If this is not commonplace for you, I can see this being a bit something that might put you up. Because I had to watch it twice myself to see, is this something that I missed in here? Because the only thing that I thought was a little out of place was the mousetrap.
Yeah, I agree.
But other than that, I didn't see anything out of place of what hardcore wrestling, good hardcore wrestling, really is. The only thing that I think was missing was a little bit of pathos. Because I don't feel like, you know, like I said, I think Kenny Omega died for sins he didn't commit. That's my that's my one beef with this match. Other than that, I thought it was great. But yeah, I definitely agree with you with people becoming soft and not knowing what they want. Case in point, that has nothing to do with wrestling, but people will complain about anything and they still won't be happy when they get what they want. The new Sonic, after they... I know this is... But I had to bring this up because I'll be so upset if Sonic does not open with a good weekend. If this does not... If people don't line up to go see Sonic after they went back and redesigned the character after a year and pushed the movie out a year for you, and if you do not go out, kill yourself. To quote Jim Cornette.
So, you know what this... In all honesty, you know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of, like... So people will often, like, have taken a lot of media within the last 10 years and be like, oh, these characters are offensive or these jokes are offensive and stuff like this. Like, a great example is, like, people will go back and rewatch, like, Friends or The Office. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, that's a racist show or a homophobic show. And I'll often talk about, I'm like, and they're like, oh, okay, well, I mean, I guess you should never watch Blazing Saddles then or anything Mel Brooks. And they're like, and they'll be like, oh, well, that's different, though. And I was just like, is it, though? Because I had a buddy who, he's very, like, social justice warrior. But he's a big Mel Brooks fan. And I was like, dude, how can you support both? He's like, well, he's more intelligent about how he puts it together. I was like, no, dude, it's the same stuff. It's the exact same things. It's just, in modern day, it's not accepted as it used to be. And so, therefore, you want to rail against it. I was like, it's the same exact thing. It's just like this. Like, I think a lot of the stuff we are seeing is not too different than what we would have seen on ECW. But because it has that nostalgia factor and the already built greatness upon it, people can't critique it too well. Like, mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of older films that commit a lot of the quote-unquote cinema sins that we rail against today. But because they're already established as classics, they're not going to rail against those films for those reasons.
People pick and choose what they want to get upset about. And nobody didn't. I didn't set aside any time for the Jericho thing, and I didn't have I want to go a bit longer on that. But another thing, as far as when people picking their hills to die on, Jericho just recently came out and called NXT WWE ECW from 2009.
Yeah.
And I have this opinion that if you're you can say whatever you want on wrestling Twitter if you're not the top guy in WWE. that's literally what it comes down to. You can love your company if you're not the top guy in WWE. Even if you're in WWE, because like I said, no one's going to get mad at Rusev for not hating his angle in WWE with Lana right now because he's not the top guy. So you still have this sympathy for him that's misplaced at best. But the minute you like I said, Nick Aldis can go out there and call Cody Rhodes a unworthy athlete and someone who's not on his level. RVD can go out there and call All Elite Wrestling All Petite Wrestling. You know, everybody else can talk shit about every other company. But if you are cashing the biggest check, or if you are spotlighted the highest in WWE, I'm not saying any names, you bet not say shit.
If Cody Rhodes came out today and he said, I am the best wrestler on the planet, everybody would say, come over, unzip your pants, and let me suck on you. Because they would totally bow down to it. But because of one, not naming any names, one person says it, they're like, oh, you bitch.
So, like I said, it's that's kind of that's the end of my rant on that today.
Yeah. So, okay, everybody, that's going to wrap up our episode today. As you kind of teased, I was going to talk about this anyway. Next week, we're going to actually dive into that next installment of the
Jericho, yeah.
Yeah, of all the Jericho segments. We're going to cover, was it his heel time in WCW?
We're going to do both, honestly, because I didn't really touch too many a little bit, but I want to do the actual heel turn because I do remember it being how epic it was and just the shift from the white meat babyface, the smarmy asshole heel that we've come to even kind of love today. Because you see a little bit of it still even in Le Champion Jericho, but it started in WCW in 1997.
All right, so we're going to dive into that when we come back. As always, if you guys want to hit us up on Twitter and Instagram, HTWPod, you can find us there. Subscribe, retweet us, reply to us, do whatever you want. Also, you can find us on Anchor, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and really anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can find us there. Be sure to subscribe to us, share our page. We definitely appreciate that. But for now, I am the featured attraction, Brian Dusky.
I am the fantastic Nikki Fontaine.
And we will see you guys next week. Goodbye.